ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
This is the NT Country Hour on ABC Radio Darwin and the Northern Territory.
G'day there, my name is Matt Brand. Welcome to the Country Hour, a special program today because I am broadcasting from the official opening of the Kimberley Cotton Gin. This facility, this huge facility, is located in the famous Ord Irrigation Scheme. Now, the show this afternoon is being broadcast right across the Northern Territory and also into regional WA, which is fantastic. This cotton gin, it cost about $60 million to build. And in terms of a processing facility in Northern Australia, this is really significant, what has been launched here today on the outskirts of Kununurra. So let's learn all about it. My first guest this afternoon is Jim Engelke, who's the chair of the Kimberley Cotton Company. Welcome to the Country Hour. Tell our audience, Jim, about this big facility.
Oh, thank you, Matt. This facility is... Well, it's big and it's also very pretty, as you've probably noted walking around this morning. This facility's been in planning now, as we heard this morning, some of our opening addresses, for quite a number of years. Started pre-COVID, had a little bit of a crash there as we headed into COVID. But today we are looking around at what is a very nice and facility almost complete and ready to process some cotton.
Yeah, when will the first modules be coming into this facility?
We expect that we'll be processing our first bale of cotton as soon as we can pretty much shut down this opening ceremony. We'll be starting up operations. So I imagine sometime in the next day or two, yep, we'll put the first bale through this facility.
I thought you might have done one for the crowd here today. You know, but get one cranking through the system.
Probably a bit complicated with 200 or 300 people walking around. We thought we'd probably start with a few less people around, I think, Matt.
Yeah, there's a few hundred people here right now as we're broadcasting. And then later on this afternoon, the gin's been opened up to the community to come and see it for themselves. How important do you think that is, Jim?
Oh, look, this whole process has been about community engagement, community involvement. There's been an awful lot of people involved in this process along the journey. So to open it up is really just to showcase what we've done, let people come and have a look at it. So, yes, you're right. This afternoon we're opening up guided tours for people who have pre-booked, so we just needed to do that. Otherwise, we couldn't handle sort of 300 or 400 at a time. But it's really just to showcase what we've got here, which is a fairly impressive site.
In terms of the cotton season this year in the Ord Irrigation Scheme, how are things going out there in the paddock?
Well, the year started pretty well. We got in terms of cotton area, just under 10,000 hectares. So we kicked off with a pretty strong start. Picking commenced here a couple of weeks ago now. Mm-hmm. So we're just ramping that up now. So the picking will ramp up just as our processing will kick into gear, we're hoping. That's the planning. So, cotton season to date is looking very good in terms of yields, quality. Well, I can't exactly tell you, but we don't expect too many surprises on the negative.
Right. So instead of harvesting cotton and sending it all the way to Katherine, or perhaps even sending it all the way down to Dalby in Queensland, which has happened before, all that cotton now gets to come to this facility. From there, though, once it's processed, Jim, where's the cotton going to?
Well, it's a good question because this project's not just about a cotton gin, as you well know. This is about an entire cotton industry. So we're having to establish everything that's associated with the industry. That's our planting windows, that's our logistics takeoffs. So for this year, and we're well and truly advanced in our planning, and the first containers arrived only 2 days ago. For 40-foot containers landing via the Port of Wyndham. So we're very excited that getting cotton lent out via Wyndham is a major shift for the region and a major positive for this part of the world.
If all goes to plan, how many shipments go out of Wyndham in a season?
Look, as a start-up, it'll be a bit of... because, you know, we're commissioning a gin and A&L, the company doing the port call, we're feeling our way through. So, but ideally, every 10 to 14 days, we would be shipping cotton out of the Port of Wyndham.
Wow. That'd make it surely one of the biggest commodities for Wyndham Port then.
Look, it's certainly an underpinning commodity.
It'd be up there.
It'll be up there.
Yeah. Now, today's broadcast, and for those just tuning in, this is the Country Hour. Matt Brown with you this afternoon. I'm at the official opening of the Kimberley Cotton Gin in the Audio Irrigation Scheme. And it's great. Today's broadcast going out across the Northern Territory and also regional WA. Not far from where we stand, Jim Angulke, is this imaginary line that some people call the WANT border. And on the other side of that, there is a company with plans to grow all kinds of crops, but grow cotton. What role could the Northern Territory play in this gin here?
Well, the Northern Territory, from a number of different angles, clearly Northern Territory still have a large and functioning port that the north of Australia needs functioning ports. So there's definitely opportunity there, because as we grow an industry here, there's more inputs required from every different direction. Agriculture more generally is starting to see a bit of an uptick across the border at that imaginary line, as you quite clearly point out. Probably for the Ord, we've been doing agriculture for quite some time, and we're hoping that the Northern Territory over the coming years can replicate that, or indeed better it.
I know I can't bring a banana from Katherine to Kununurra. Am I allowed to bring a cotton module across the border?
Well, I can't bring a banana from Katherine to Kununurra either, Matt. But yes, we certainly did some work many years ago to allow the provision to bringing seed cotton or module cotton across the border. However, that's probably, in most instances, not required for some obvious reasons.
Rightio. As mentioned, as of 2 years ago, there's a brand new cotton gin at Katherine, and now there's one at Kununurra. In the early days of this industry, can it sustain two gins successfully?
Well, that's the obvious reason why we don't probably need to bring it across the border. But yes, I mean, Katherine got their cotton gin up and running last year and had a good first year last year from all accounts. Can the North? Yes, I believe it can. Certainly, for our part of the world, we are desiring expansion to the irrigated area to put more cotton through this gin, and the NT as well, looking to expand the production capacity as well to feed the cotton gin in Katherine.
How many bales could this do if everything goes to plan for cotton in the north?
For our cotton gin, in its fully expanded capacity, look, up to 250,000 bales. You know, that would be a big year, but that's certainly its capacity.
Wow. I'm just trying to do the maths. 250,000 bales, how many hectares roughly would...
That'd be roughly 25,000 hectares of cotton crop in the ground. But remembering, you also need land for fallow and other crops. So
it's
rotational crops. We're not all about cotton here. We're about farming systems and having diversity in our farming system.
And just finally, before we have a quick chat to the Minister for Northern Australia, who is here this afternoon, what does all this mean to you, Jim? You've been involved in the Ord for so long.
Oh, that's a big question, Matt. But certainly from a regional point of view, for me, the most pleasing aspect is the community engagement, but also the fact that this is an enabling project. So the cotton gin here is a major enabler to things like the port, which, yes, well and good, we'll be sending cotton out, but we might be able to bring building products, steel, all those sorts of things. This area has always suffered from its remoteness, and logistics has always been a major challenge. Roads are our primary source of freight into Kununurra, and that gets cut, as we know, from year to year and reasonably frequently. So with cotton enabling the upgrade of the port, you know, the future of the region looks very exciting, and being a resident of the region, clearly that pleases me.
Thanks so much for your time today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Matt.
That is Jim Engelke, who is the chair of the Kimberley Cotton Company. If you're tuning in, this is The Country Hour. My name's Matt Brand. We're broadcasting this afternoon right across the territory and also regional WA, which is fantastic. I'm joined now by the Minister for Northern Australia, the Federal Minister, Madeleine King. Afternoon to you.
Yeah, good to see you, Matt. How are you?
I am well.
Yeah, what a
Why
day.
Were you keen to be here today in Kununurra?
Well, because the Northern Australia Infrastructure Facility has put a loan into this project, and we've been part of the discussions around this project for a long time. The government before us under the coalition first approved that loan, and we've been working with the local community in Kimberley Cotton on this project, with the NAIF, of course. So it's an exciting moment, and I was really very keen to be here. And as the listeners probably can't see what we can see, which is a couple of hundred people here from right across the community here in Kununurra, but also from cotton growing regions in New South Wales, to be here when we really start what is that, you know, great next step of the cotton industry in northern Western Australia.
The cotton gin in Katherine, it was funded through private money. Why do you think the gin in Kununurra is a good investment for the NAIF?
I think it's a good investment for the NAIF, and as I've said before, this is not the largest NAIF loan. In fact, it's very far from it. But I am confident that it will be one of the most impactful. And the reason for that we can see here today and to explain to your listeners is that extraordinary community enthusiasm, which is built on many decades of research into making cotton work up here in the north, because it has been challenging with pests and diseases, and breeding that resilient cotton that can you know, drive this industry for so long into the future. The cotton gin was just a natural evolution of that, and the government wanted to be there to support that.
Now with cotton gins in Kununurra and also Katherine, this is an industry that's expanding. There are some people who are concerned that that will lead to more land clearing. What's your thoughts on this? How can you strike a balance?
Well, and governments do strike the balance. That is a really important imperative. And all these projects go through the approvals process that the community expects, the community here in Kununurra, the community in Katherine, but also the community around the country. And that's how these industries have their social licence to coexist with the environment. What's really important is the enthusiasm and the commitment of the local industry to make sure this is a safe industry, safe for the workers in it, in this operation here, but also safe for the environment out in the fields.
Thank you so much for your time on The Country Hour this afternoon. I hope you're getting a chance to, you know, have a bit of a sticky beak around the Ord and have some fun.
I love coming up here to Kununurra. It's wild and wet and woolly down in metropolitan Perth. So
it's a great time of the year to be in Kununurra.
It's certainly the best, and I'll be back again soon.
Minister,
thanks
for your time.
Thanks, Matt.
That is the Federal Minister for Northern Australia, Madeleine King, who is here today. If you're tuning in, this is The Country Hour. Matt Brown with you this afternoon, broadcasting from the official opening of this $60 million cotton gin. And it's great that we're broadcasting today across the territory and also across regional WA. My next guest is Simone Cameron from Cotton Australia. Afternoon to you. How significant is this day?
It's massive. It's a very, very amazing day, historical, you know, milestone for Northern Australia and in particular for the Eastern Kimberley region.
I was hoping this afternoon you could tell our audience, Simone, I guess a bit of a summary of what's happening with cotton in the north, starting on the other side of the continent in northern Queensland. Just run us through what's happening. Paint a picture.
We've had about 30,000 or close to 30,000 hectares across far north Queensland, the Northern Territory and WA, or in the Ord, grown this season. We're just about wrapping up our picking season in the NT, and we are just starting the picking season here in the Ord. And I was speaking to a couple of growers over in far north Queensland last week, so this interview is timely, about how they've gone over there and what they're seeing. And there's a renewed sparked interest. I think, you know, this whole messaging around Northern Australia and key developments that are happening infrastructure-wise, we now have two cotton gins for cotton processing facilities in the northern parts of Australia.
Does Northern Queensland want its one as well?
Well, yes, there's a little murmur. I'm hearing a murmur. Like it's just it's a little, you know, a whisper yep. in the wind. But essentially, from what I understand, the logistics of getting their cotton into the Emerald region for processing has been okay.
Okay.
And transport costs have been okay.
Not nearly as extreme as those who have been trying to grow cotton in the Ord. It's a long way to Dalby from here.
It's a long way. That's a song, isn't it?
It should be.
It should be.
I'll start working on that one this afternoon.
You could maybe speak to some of your counterparts in the music industry. Come on.
So you've said 30,000 hectares, roughly, of cotton across the north. There's now two gins. Can two gins be viable in this current environment?
Yes, they will be, but this will take time. And as was mentioned in some of the amazing presentations this morning with some of our chief players that have helped bring this gin to life over here, it's all about that long game. So the future-proofing of the northern parts of Australia, it's the chicken and egg. If we don't have the infrastructure, we'll only ever stall out at so many, you know, for that production system. So it's now about bedding it down and getting it happening. The next bit, the next big part of the piece is, well, our major markets for the global trade of cotton, of which Australia is the finest cotton producer in the world. We only produce 4% of the global trade. That's not a lot. But our markets are just a few hours away from us here in the north. So China, Vietnam, and Indonesia.
Yeah, Jim Engelke a moment ago said there'll be containers of cotton bales going out of the Wyndham port.
I know.
I assume that's off to China. I assume.
Yes. So those shipping lines that we have that come into either Wyndham and Darwin are predominantly, they through the Chinese ports to get to other destinations. It's not China, Singapore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Simon, have a wonderful afternoon. Thanks for your time on the Country Hour.
Look, thank you, and I'll see you in the paddock, Matt.
Yes, see you in the paddock. This is the Country Hour broadcasting from the official opening of the Kimberley Cotton Gin. My next guest here this afternoon is Dustin Richards, who works here. Tell me about your job, Dustin.
All right, I'm the site manager, so I just look after operations within the place and keep things going.
Tell our audience where we are. Whereabouts have I set up here this afternoon? I can almost see the stands.
Yeah, so we're in the control room on the opening day. We've got maybe 150 people here. So everything's panning out all right this morning. And tomorrow, we're hopefully going to fire this place up.
Yeah.
And start commissioning some machinery, working on PLC and the locks and the programs, and get up to production.
What's that going to mean to you, Dustin, when the first bit of lint starts filtering down?
It's difficult. So with new cotton gins, there's a lot of teething that we've got to get through. It's going to take a little bit of time to get up to production. As you know, you can imagine, that's just come out of construction. But yeah, a couple of weeks, we should be at full production, hopefully.
Yeah. And I was hoping you could tell our audience this afternoon, Justin, how does it work extracting the seed from the lint? Both of them valuable products.
So effectively, what we're doing in the cotton gin is the farmers harvesting their cotton and they're bringing it to us up here at about 8% incoming moisture. So we run it into a disperser cylinder. It's effectively a big mulcher, and we break it up and then it gets conveyed through air in this place and we dry it out to a certain percentage and it runs through a series of machines. So we shake it and agitate it and separate all the leaf from the fibres. And then from that point, it goes over to the gin stands. And the gin stand is what separates the lint from the fibre. So what's happening with the gin stand is, as the cotton goes into it, it's full of these really fine saws that grab hold of the fibres and they pull them through a gap. And the cotton seed's too big to go through the gap, so it falls down the front. So that's the process of the ginning as such.
Yeah.
But after that point, we send it over to a very large hydraulic press and we press it into bales of 227 kilos. That's the standard.
Yep.
And then from there, it's now a usable commodity and it leaves the gin and gets exported.
Can be used and make sucks,
shocks
and everything else. Yeah. Yep. So they arrive as modules, cotton modules. They leave as cotton bales. And I assume there's a shed here somewhere that will get filled with cotton seed that the cattle industry will be keeping an eye on.
Yeah. So we have a storage hopper on site.
Yep.
So there's a local market for the cotton seed, farmers, cattle, and some will get turned into oil for extraction. So yeah, so there'll be a little bit of logistics coming in and out of the place.
And just finally, Dustin, you're new to this region. You've travelled from the other side of the country to come and get a job here in Kununurra. Tell us why.
The adventure. So, you know, I moved my family 4,000 kilometres to this place and have a crack at running this new gin and see if we can keep it, you know, Australia's premier gin, keep it looking good.
Thanks so much for your time this afternoon. And good luck with the fishing as well. I hope you're a keen fisherman.
Sure am.
Good.
Thank you.
That is Dustin Richards, who is with Louis Dreyfus Company. And as he said, he's made the big trip from New South Wales up here to the Kimberley region of WA to work in this brand new cotton gin, the newest gin in Australia. That's got some quite interesting features about it as well. So that's where I'll bring in Daniel de Rheim, who's also here at the gin. Welcome to the Country Hour, Daniel. Tell me a few things about this gin that makes it so special.
Oh, well, we got quite a few industry firsts, to be honest. We got safety innovations. We got the first cotton gin in the world ever to have a Category 3 safety system throughout the plant. So safety is one of our big things. We've also got industry firsts on automation. It helps us get minimise our downtime and maximise our throughput and those sorts of things. What else do we have?
Can you tell me about the energy for this place? I think that's a bit of a first, yeah?
Yeah, so this will be the only cotton gin in Australia, period, supplied by Hydro Green Energy for a start. Additionally to that, we've got all the latest technology, I guess, on variable speed drives and power factor correction and all those sorts of things. We actively monitor power usage in real time. So this will be, as far as energy goes, we should be the most efficient cotton gin in Australia.
And when fully operational, roughly how many people will be working here?
Operationally, we're looking at a permanent staff of probably around a dozen, something like that.
Yep.
And then you almost double that again with casuals when we operate. So, and you know, we'll pull those casuals locally from the community, also some of the permanents as well. So not a high labour force, but certainly we value add into the community largely with the maintenance programs. So all the local contractor groups, you know, the guys, the plumbers, the guys that do steelwork, the electricians, we'll keep those guys going now indefinitely for as long as we operate.
Yeah. And so in early days of this gin, roughly how long will the season go for?
Look, we try and target, we normally start about now.
Yep.
So that's basically in line with the timing of the project as well. So we'll be operationally typically at the start of August, which is when they harvest. And then our aim is to basically finish before Christmas.
Okay. So before that rain arrives.
Correct. That's correct. So it's very different up here.
Yep.
It's almost opposite the East Coast. You get a wet drought up here, not a dry drought. So basically, we shy away from that monsoon.
Now, throughout this broadcast this afternoon, I've been waxing lyrical about just how big it is. But to give our audience a better sense, how high is this roof, for example?
So the walls are 23 metres and the apex is 25.
25 metres high.
25 metre shed, yep. The main shed's 5,000 square metres in area.
And how much steel went into it? You were rattling off some awesome facts earlier on.
I'm going from memory here. I'm pretty sure it was 110,000 tonnes of structural steel.
Kilometres of electrics, it's unreal.
It was something like 32 kilometres of electrical cabling that went into the facility.
Yep.
We've got roughly 6,000 or 7,000 square metres of concrete.
And for you, how challenging and how rewarding has it been to build something like this in, let's face it, a pretty remote part of the nation?
Yeah, look, we certainly had our challenges up here. I've built five of these cotton gin plants now over Australia in the last 20-odd years, but new challenges up here. Wet season, was a big part of that. Mm-hmm. Had 3 months of the year where we couldn't even construct because it was just too wet. So concrete is working with snorkels, basically. But
so what does it mean for you then today to see this official opening?
Look, to have the opening for us to actually complete this project on time, on budget, on scope, very rewarding. So it's actually surprised a lot of people, I think, that we could actually do this in the Kimberley, being so remote. But here we are, done.
Daniel, thanks for your time on the Country Hour this afternoon. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
If you're tuning in, this is the Country Hour, broadcasting this afternoon right across the Northern Territory and also into regional WA. My name is Matt Bran. My next guest is David Menzel, who's the Shire President of Wyndham East Kimberley. What do you hope this big facility with a 25-metre high roof will mean for the, not just farmers, but the community, David?
Yeah, thanks, Matt. Great to see you. This really stimulates a productive scale industry in the East Kimberley, but importantly, we can get rid of the lint, but the seed side of it is a real stimulus to the pastoral industry. So I think going forward, the pastoral industry will be looking to increase their productivity like we all do, which means filling in that feed gap. Once the good feed's gone, we need to keep those animals growing and healthy, so we'll look to the cotton to fill that gap.
There were a few cattle producers in the room this afternoon having a look.
Yeah, well, everything takes supply chains take a bit of developing, so we won't get there in 1 year, but give us 2, 3, 4 years, I think we'll have a really tidy supply chain in place, and that goes, you know, all the way through all the different areas of this cotton industry.
Where you and I are standing right now, you've only got a sort of peek through a window, and you can see the old Ord sugar mill that closed down in 2007. What do you think the key is going to be to make sure this brand new cotton facility can be strong, thrive and survive for decades to come?
A commitment to develop Northern Australia, really. That's the big picture, and we've just come back from Cairns and a conference over there talking about these things. A real commitment to work with local communities about development in the north and making sure we do things to the best of our ability, fulfilling all those obligations, to social obligations, environmental, and then the business. I'm sure the business stuff's going to flow out of that. Really, that's probably the easy bit. It's getting all the paperwork done that takes the time and creates the grey hair and stress.
And can I ask you a question? Because I can bet when all this goes up online this afternoon, there'll be someone get out their keyboard and go, cotton, how come you don't grow hemp? What's the answer to that, David Menzel?
The demand's not there and the economic returns aren't there for hemp. It's a great product in its place, but this valuable land on which we're operating and the resources we've got here are much better suited to cotton. There's a huge demand in the world for natural fibres. I find it strange that probably the synthetic fibres tick more environmental boxes than the natural fibres do, because they're being driven to need to do that. And I think we've bypassed a lot of the natural fibres and haven't got the credibility and the sustainability ratings that it really deserves. But I think that's just a work in progress. Cotton here is absolutely a brilliant fit to our environment and to the resources we've got available. It copes very well. A lot of cotton's grown where there's not a lot of water. We've got lots of water, and cotton is probably one of the crops that uses the least amount of water of anything we grow.
David Menzel, I'll let you enjoy the rest of your afternoon, and lovely to see you. Appreciate it.
Lovely to be here. Thanks, Matt.
That is David Menzel, Shire President of Wyndham East Kimberley, who from memory has grown a bit of cotton himself in the past. I really hope you've enjoyed our broadcast this afternoon from the official opening of the Kimberley Cotton Gin in the Ord Irrigation Scheme. To those listening in regional WA, I'll now hand you back to the very capable hands of Mr. Richard Hudson. And as for our listeners in the Northern Territory, well, I hope you've been enjoying the broadcast and learning a thing or two about the Ord and this big new $60 million facility. Where I stand, I can just see some big modules out the back. I've been meaning to ask someone about the colour of the wraps. Around here, they're either yellow or pink. Who makes those decisions about what colour to wrap the cotton modules up in? That might be my mission for this afternoon. I'll go and find someone who can tell me a bit about that. We've got to go to the newsroom here in a moment, but stick around. Plenty of country are coming up after the 1 o'clock news. As always, I'll be speaking to the Weather Bureau to get the latest rundown from them. And you'll also get a chance to meet a grower here in the Ord Irrigation Scheme. Yes, he grows cotton, but he also grows melons, pumpkins. He's grown chia. He loves growing corn. And he'll provide you with an update on how the season is going here in 2025. But now, it's time to head to the newsroom. It is 1 o'clock on your ABC Radio.
G'day, I'm Toby. I'm Cotton Ginner in Northern Territory. You're listening to The Country Hour.
Matt Brown with you this afternoon, broadcasting from the official opening of the Kimberley Cotton Gin in the Ord Irrigation Scheme. If you missed the first half of the program, you missed a lot. Remember, you'll always be able to catch it via the podcast and listen at a time that suits you. Still lots of people here at the official opening. The general public will be allowed to come through later on this afternoon. So just being around town in the last 24 hours or so, that is what everyone is talking about. Everyone's got themselves a ticket to come and check out the Cotton Gin. Our text number at the Country Hour is 0487 991057. Someone here reckons we should be playing Cotton Eye Joe this afternoon on the radio. That's not a bad song suggestion. Someone here says, where are they getting the water for the cotton, Matt? I've heard they're irrigating from local groundwater with no proper environmental assessment. No groundwater here in the Ord Irrigation Scheme. If you come to Kununurra, you will see all of the channels. So this Ord Irrigation Scheme, right, it started in the 1960s. The diversion dam at town was built in 1963, and then about a decade later, they built what would become Lake Argyle. And the water from Argyle, it filters through the hydro scheme that gives this region all of its green electricity. And then it comes down to a little spot called the Pump House, which these days has been turned into a restaurant. But it's at that location where there is the big M1 channel. And water from it starts moving through the irrigation scheme. It allows the growers to gravity feed, which is a big saving from them. And then, well, I don't know, probably be decade more. Ord Stage 2 was opened up, so they extended the main channel into the second channel. And again, all the farmers, they're just drawing water from the channels and they flood irrigate their cotton crops. That's how it works in the Ord Irrigation Scheme. And as we heard on the Country Hour last week, the company on the other side of the border, AAM Investment Group, it's hoping one day that channel, be it an open channel or maybe a pipeline, will be able to continue pushing this Ord water across into the Northern Territory so cropping can be done there as well. So I hope that answers your question. Let's go to the Weather Bureau now. Rebecca Patrick is there this afternoon. Beck, how's the weather in the Northern Territory at the moment? I can tell you it's a sunny day in Cunners.
Yeah, pretty much the same in the Territory. Pretty much sunny right throughout. There's just a few high clouds in the south. But yeah, dry air has pushed through over the weekend, so even the top end, pretty much cloud-free. Didn't even get any fog in the Arnhem District this morning. And that meant that the temperatures were a little bit cooler this morning in the north as well.
Any record-breaking low temperatures like we have seen in the last week or so?
Oh, we did have a record, actually. Let me see if I can find it. It was just off the north coast this morning at Croker Island. 14.9 degree was a record for them, but they haven't got a long record, only 13 years of data at that particular station.
Okay. There's still some people fighting fires out in the rangelands at the moment. What are conditions like, especially wind conditions, Beck?
Yeah, so we have had elevated winds a little bit over the weekend. They're dropping off today, though, because we do have a trough moving through the south instead of that normal ridge. So winds easing a little bit. southeasterlies through the northern parts of the territory, tending a bit more northeasterly in the south, with a trough that's moving mostly through South Australia, so a little bit warmer in the southern parts of the territory today, getting up to about average around the Alice Springs area. And then for the week ahead, those winds picking up again through central parts of the territory with the next ridge building.
Any warnings out today that we need to be aware of?
No warnings, and not anticipated through much of the week either.
Okay, so good week to get out there and do some fishing?
Yeah. For fishos, winds at the moment are looking, if you're in the harbour, generally east to southeasterly below about 10 knots. So similar tomorrow, then maybe picking up a little bit from Wednesday. Further ashore in the Gulf of Carpentaria, those winds getting up to about 20 knots out there and also off the north coast.
Okay, anything else that you think we should be aware of, Beck?
Not too much change this week, just maybe a few showers for anyone in the eastern parts of the top end from tomorrow for the next few days, but pretty much sunny conditions throughout the rest of the territory, and another cool change in the south next weekend.
Yeah, it's a real burst of dry season at the moment, and I think most punters are enjoying that. Thanks so much for your time, Beck. Appreciate it.
No worries. Thanks, Matt.
That is Rebecca Patrick there at the Weather Bureau. It's 10 past one and you are tuned into the Country Hour. Matt Brown with you this afternoon. I spent the weekend driving from Darwin to Kununurra and the Ord Irrigation Scheme. To me, it was noticeable the lack of traffic that was on the Victoria Highway. It was pretty darn quiet out on the Vic, and there was a lot of haze in the sky as well. I think there's been some decent blazes to the south of Timber Creek, and that was noticeable as you were driving along that highway, a fair bit of haze in the air. I am in the Ord Irrigation Scheme for the official opening of the Kimberley Cotton Gin. Let's hear now from one of the local farmers. His name is Christian Blocker. Yes, he grows a bit of cotton, but he also grows rock melons, honeydews, pumpkins, corn, chickpeas. I know he's dabbled in chia over the years as well. His farm and his family have been here for decades, and Christian says this dry season's actually been one of the colder ones. They've had plenty of nights dipping into the single digits. And he told our local Kimberley reporter that the chilly conditions have been good and bad for his crops.
The cold weather, definitely no good for the melons and pumpkins, and the main result is there that the average size of the fruit decreases, because it's just too cold overnight. But then on the flip side, for the chickpeas, they're loving this colder weather. They're flowering and potting up a lot better, which conversely to last year, we lost some flowers and pods because it was too hot. So it'll be interesting to see in about 4 to 6 weeks' time when we go to harvest the chickpeas, how positive this weather has been for them.
Have you had to delay or accelerate any harvest because of the temperatures?
It's definitely increased the days to maturity. So we're probably 10 days longer for the melons, the pumpkins 15 to 20 days longer. And then also noticing it on the cotton at the moment that it's just sitting there and not really maturing. So that's definitely taking a lot longer than what was originally, penciled in for when we would be, defoliating and picking.
There have been some decent winds recently too. Has the combination of the low temperatures and the winds been challenging at all?
Probably more so for the cotton, because some of it's fallen over. It's all a bit top heavy anyway, the crop that we've got this year. And then for the melons as well, it just makes it colder, even colder on the ground, especially just after we've irrigated with flat irrigation. So it decreases the temperature again. It doesn't help.
Have you had to take certain steps to protect your crops?
There's not much we can do for the crops, but I've definitely been wearing my beanie a lot more than planned this year, especially as I'm follically challenged, so it helps. Not much we can do from a crop point of view. So it goes in cycles. It's not the coldest it's been. We've had it before, but it's definitely cooler, or the number of, especially the number of single digit nights that we've had is more than what we would have on average. But then the days, like yesterday, we went from 9.5 up to 33. So the days have still been warm. It's just the most of the crops don't like the big day-night temperature differences. So there's still been enough warmth there to grow the crops. It's just not growing as well as what they could be.
That is Christian Blocker speaking to our new rural reporter in the Kimberley region, Jess Baker, talking about a pretty chilly dry season for the Ord and the pros and cons of that. So right now, Christian's busy harvesting melons and pumpkins. He's doing that 6 days a week at the moment, and I actually drove past his farm this morning and saw his cotton crop. He'll be harvesting that very soon, very soon. And it will be coming to this Kimberley Cotton Gin, which has been officially opened today in the Ord Irrigation Scheme. It's a big deal for farmers in this region because, yeah, for quite a few years now, they've either been sending it to the new gin in Katherine or going much further. I forget how far it is from Cunnamulla to Dalby, but it's a lot. You are tuned into the Country Hour. It's 1:15.
G'day, my name's Isabel Heffman and I'm a business analyst based at Amundimundi Station. So there's more than just running cattle and chasing cows around. There's a lot going on behind the scenes in the office. There's always an excuse to get onto Excel and make some data-driven decisions. And you're listening to the Country Hour.
Now on Friday's Country Hour, I had a chat with Gary Riggs from Lakefield Cattle Station near Matarenka. He was busy battling a fire that had already burnt something like 10,000 hectares. How did that fire start? Well, here's a bit of what Gary told us on Friday.
The fire actually came from the rail track, and there was another person at Bloodwood that was driving around, and he saw a service vehicle in the vicinity when the smoke come up. So we're assuming that's where it come from, and then the same with the Sturt Downs one. So that service vehicle would have travelled up there, and there was the one on Evergo at the same time, and not long after that. And then I see there's a few spots north of Katherine as well on the rail corridor. So
are you suggesting someone's been a bit naughty, maybe letting out a cigarette out the window or something?
I think so, yeah. Right along, and yeah, it's cost us 4 days of beating that fire. It's cost us a lot in feed. You know, diesel, I had to get a grader there just to keep making our brakes wider, and yeah, and just a little bit annoyed that, you know, as a station we have to have fire brakes around our boundaries, but we have a railway track that runs through us and they don't have fire brakes. I just would like to know the reason why that is.
So that is Gary Riggs from Lakefield Station speaking to us on Friday. The Country Hour put Gary's concerns to Aurizon, which operates and manages the rail line between Darwin and Adelaide. In a statement from that company, it said, Aurizon takes bushfire risk seriously and have a number of proactive measures in place to help mitigate fire threats. It says the railway corridor itself, including the track formation and adjacent access roads, acts as a substantial firebreak. In addition, it says, we conduct regular vegetation management throughout the year using both mechanical clearing and targeted herbicide application. It says, we have in the past also worked with NT Bushfires to construct a strategic firebreak along the western fence line extending approximately 250 k's south of Katherine. It says this initiative was undertaken at our cost to help manage wildfires originating east of the rail line and reflects our commitment to responsible land management. That's the statement from Aurizon sent to the Country Hour. It is 18 past one. The Mount Isa Rodeo was held on the weekend. Did you go to it? I'm just so happy that the whole event went ahead because it was looking a bit dicey there for a while there at the Isa, but it did go ahead. Up next, let's have a bit of a song, and up next we'll find out who took home the big belt buckles.
Hey, my name's Joe Brown. I'm one of the competitors here at Daily Waters Camp Draft and Rodeo, and you're listening to the Country Hour.
Matt Brand with you this afternoon, and how good the Mount Isa Rodeo was held on the weekend, the biggest rodeo in the Southern Hemisphere. It survived 2025. And the open finals, they were on yesterday in front of a huge crowd. The ABC's Andrew Saunders caught up with some of the winners.
Ben Rasmussen from Navitire, New South Wales. Oh, it was a tough horse. Felt every second of that, so it was good to ride to get a score, and then to win it's made it really worth it.
Tell us a bit about yourself. How long you've been competing in rodeos and all that?
A few years now, 8 or 9 years, I suppose. I've been in Saddle Bronx, only second trip up to here, but yeah, be coming a few more times now.
So what's it like to win here at the Isa Rodeo?
It's iconic as it gets. Never really thought about it. I was just focusing on each horse, each ride, and then for it to all come together, it was amazing.
And the calibre of riders this weekend, what's it like?
Oh, yeah, all the best riders are here, like a good bunch of boys and, yeah, a lot of handy fellas. And, yeah, you never know what's going to happen on the day.
So this is only your second time to the Isa Rodeo. Paint us a bit of a picture. What's it like riding at the Isa Rodeo?
Oh, it's cool. I came here when I was pretty young, and I'm back now after being to a fair few rodeos, so it feels really, really comfy here and really fun, and I love it.
Here, Sunday afternoon, what's it like riding in this arena?
Oh, awesome. Last night was awesome, but today, just in this sunny afternoon with a full crowd, you can't get much better, hey.
Back to defend your title next year?
Oh, definitely. I'll have to for sure. I'm already keen to get back up here and do these northern rodeos.
How do you celebrate tonight?
The same as every other night for the last week, I suppose. with a few beers and a few drinks and late nights, I suppose, yeah.
G'day, I'm Jared McCain from Chilton, Victoria, and I just won the open bareback here at Mount Isa. This is a special feeling. It's one of the biggest in Australia, so it's good to be back and good to be in the winning circle again.
And the weekend, how did you think you rode?
Yeah, not too bad. A couple of little things, but it's always working on something. Yeah.
Tell us a bit about yourself, how long you've been riding for and all that.
I think I've been riding now for about 8 years or something like that, and then I'm a shearer from Victoria as well, so just rodeo on and shearing all the time. It's good.
How long have you been coming to Mount Isa for?
I've been coming since 2018.
You've had success in the past?
I won this rodeo in 2023.
What does this compare to in 2023? It looks like a bigger crowd this year. What's it like?
Yeah, a good crowd, good horses. You can't ask much more than that.
So you've brought the family up this weekend. It's a costly exercise, isn't it?
Yeah, we've been up on the run since the start of July.
To win money like this today, does that help?
Every little bit helps. Every little bit helps you get down the road a little bit further.
So is the prize money okay here in Mount Isa?
Yeah, it's good.
And the competition this weekend, what was the competition like?
It was very good to be a part of. It's the best pen of horses I've seen here for a few years.
Yeah, so the Gill brothers are back. They haven't been here for about 10 years.
Yep.
Is it good to have them back and bring in that calibre stock?
It sure is. Just good horses to get on there. You can be a lot of points on and have a lot of fun.
Next year, will you be back?
I'd say so.
Hey, yeah, come on, Mount Isa. How good's this kid?
G'day, I'm Daniel Rogan from Tamworth, New South Wales, and I've just won the bull ride at Mount Isa Rodeo 2024. Pretty excited, been coming up here for a few years and haven't been able to get the win, so it's good to finally get the job done.
What made it different this year to win though?
Probably just the confidence you step on their backs with. That sort of shows whether you're going to ride them or not, whether you think you can or can't, you're right. So yeah, there's no room for any second guessing or anything when you're riding bulls. So
tell us a bit about yourself, how long you've been riding for and what you do.
I'm 28 and I've been riding since I was about 8 years old. Family, got into it through family and that. Older cousins ride, uncles rode bulls, so she was sort of bred into me. And I'm contract fencing during the week back down home in New South Wales, and boilermaker by trade, so a bit of that and a bit of stock work and whatnot in between as well.
What's the calibre of riders been like this weekend?
You get all the good bull riders in Australia come up to Mount Isa. It's the most prestigious rodeo in the Southern Hemisphere, so all the big guys are here and everyone wants to win the money, so it's bloody, I'm tickled to come out on top.
The Gill brothers are back. They haven't been to the Isa Rodeo for 10 years, the stock contractors. Yeah. What was their stock like?
I thought the stock were exceptional over the bulls and all the Bronx, and that they're some of the best Bronx I've ever seen.
How important is it to have good stock for a cowboy?
Yeah, well, it makes the cream rise to the top of the crop when you're all getting on good stock, and yeah, it's not an accident when you win. Yeah, it was awesome yesterday. The crowd and that last night was roaring loud, and that I was up the night before, but last night the crowd was really loud.
So the Isa Radio has been under a bit of cloud the last 6 months, so it was all worry it might happen and has happened. Did the Cowboys know about all that?
Yeah, we all knew about it. It was sort of out there on the news and on social media and that, and everyone saw it and that. But I saw when Marcus Kerr and a heap of the local guys were getting together that I knew they'd be able to get something done.
How important is it to have the Isa Radio?
It wouldn't be the same without it, that's for sure. She's by far the biggest stop on all year round on the APRA circuit. So, yeah, it's a prestigious rodeo and I'm excited to win it.
And back next year to defend your title?
I sure will be.
That is Daniel Rogan from Tamworth in New South Wales, who took out the open bull ride at the famous Mount Isa Rodeo on the weekend. Well done to Daniel. That's a champion effort. A moment ago, I was sharing with you a statement from Aurizon, which operates the rail line from Adelaide to Darwin. It was responding to some concerns about fires coming out of the train tracks. I've got a text here that says, bushfires have told us that the rail corridor is exempt from the Bushfires Act. Some maintenance of the track involves angle grinders. The belief that the rail track is a substantial fire break is complete BS. We've stood in front of a fire which just jumped the tracks as though it wasn't even there, says someone on the text line this afternoon, 0487 99 1057. It's been a big program this afternoon, and I hope you've enjoyed our broadcast from the Kimberley Cotton Gin. So it's been officially opened today, and even now there's still plenty of people having a bit of a sticky beak around this brand new facility. It's got a new car smell about it, this building. A building with a roof that was, what did he tell us? 25 metres high. Unbelievable. Now, if you missed any of our first half and the coverage from this official opening in the Audio Irrigation Scheme, remember you can catch the whole show via our podcast. You just find it wherever you get your favourite podcasts. Fiona Broom will be hosting the Country Hour tomorrow. I'll see you around the traps. Keep it rural.